This podcast is brought to you by Podcast Nation.
Anyone else feel like a business class required in your schooling curriculum would have been massively helpful? Because same. We went to school to become therapists, and here we are 10 years later, really noticing the void in our knowledge on the business side of therapy, which is why we love our Masterclass membership. Masterclass has truly increased our confidence in running our therapy practice, The Therapy Group. Pros like Chris Voss, Robin Roberts, Daniel Pink, and Mark Cuban have filled that void and taught us so much about decision-making, negotiating, maximizing our time, and effective communication. This year, you too can learn from the best to become your best with Masterclass. Don't just talk about improving, Masterclass actually helps you do it. Plus, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so there's no risk. And right now, our listeners will get an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/shrinkchicks. Get 15% off right now at masterclass.com/shrinkchicks. masterclass.com/shrinkchicks.
We are so excited for you to all hear today's episode with our guest, Gina Cunningham. Gina is a doctor of physical therapy and a board-certified pelvic health specialist, and one of my favorite colleagues to share clients with. Gina clues us into what a pelvic floor actually is, why pelvic floor health matters. She explains the reasons why someone might go to pelvic floor physical therapy and takes us through what a typical evaluation looks like. She answers some of your questions like, do Kegel exercises actually work? And gives us all the amazing resources to help locate a pelvic floor practitioner in your area, which we will also list in today's show notes. You can follow my friend Gina on Instagram at gcunningham_PT for all things pelvic floor and PT. We hope you enjoyed today's episode and have a wonderful week.
Welcome to Shrink Chicks.
I'm Emily Beerley.
And I'm Jennifer Chaikin.
And we're licensed marriage and family therapists and owners of The Therapy Group.
We're on a mission to make therapy and therapeutic topics more relatable and accessible.
So stay tuned, because in order to grow yourself, you gotta know yourself.
Welcome back to Shrink Chicks.
Welcome to Shrink Chicks.
Okay, so we have, I feel like I always say one of my favorite people, so I guess I should say one of my dearest people, maybe today I'll say.
That's nice.
On today's episode of Shrink Chicks, we have Gina Cunningham, who is the world's most amazing pelvic floor therapist, has changed lives. And Gina and I have shared many clients and have worked together collaboratively now for like 7 years. We've been working with people, right?
Yeah, probably like 7 to 8 years, I would say.
That we're working together. So like it is. So like I'm so happy because this is a long time coming. We've tried to get you on the show.
Yes.
And yes. Now you're here.
We text and talk all the time, and it's so nice to actually have a good conversation with you and Jen. So,
oh my God. Yes. So we're here. So, okay. One of the coolest things is I feel like people talk about pelvic floors a lot more now. You see like hilarious memes, like drink your water and keep your pelvic floor strong. But like, I actually think a lot of people don't actually even know what a pelvic floor is or what a pelvic floor physical therapist does. And so I think we should start with just the basics, Gina.
Let's start with the basics.
The fuck is a pelvic floor?
What the fuck is a pelvic floor? It's going to be the name of the episode, I'm sure. I love it. So your pelvic floor muscles are at the bottom of your pelvis. So if you touch your pubic bone in the front and tailbone in the back, and then your two sit bones on the side, all of that is connected by your pelvic floor muscles. So what those muscles do is they're in charge of your bladder, bowel, and sexual function. So they're a sling or like a hammock that holds onto all of your pelvic organs. So your bladder, your uterus, and your colon. So they're a support system for all your pelvic organs. They're also postural muscles. So they're activated all day or else we'd be peeing and pooping ourselves. So they are a huge part of our body that people take for granted, that they don't even realize that it's all muscle down there. And they don't realize that they have muscle down there until there's dysfunction. And what I mean by dysfunction is leakage, whether it's urine or feces or pain. And I'm very passionate about what I do in my profession because I see so many women and men that they go through this, you know, cascade of doctors and providers, and they have all these signs and symptoms of disorders, and it's getting better, but it's not as talked about as a heart condition or a lung condition, or it should be something normal that all people should know that, oh, I have this issue and I'll go to this doctor for this. But that's not the case. So,
okay. So one of the things that somebody asked about, which I think was really important, is somebody wrote in and said, why do we not educate people earlier about their pelvic floor muscles, right? Like, I feel like a lot of times people start talking about it when it comes to if you make the decision to have a child and you're going to have like a vaginal birth. And I feel like, besides that, unless you have some type of dysfunction, like, no one really does talk about pelvic floor. What's with that?
Preaching to the choir. I know. And I think it, at first it was a generational thing that, you know, women didn't talk to their healthcare providers, or women were embarrassed to tell their friends, like, you know, I am having pain. People don't, at first, didn't talk about sex as much as they do now. But I think it is kind of a generational thing. I see sometimes with the baby boomers, they have a harder time discussing that they have urinary leakage, or that they're having intimacy issues because of pain with their partner. But I think it takes its time in our healthcare system for the education. And when we go to your OB visits, a lot of it is about the baby, and a lot of it about, you know, checking your sugar levels and checking your heart and the heart rate and your blood pressure, which is all important and good things. But that is a big issue, that women don't even know what their pelvic floor is or what it does when you deliver a baby, and it's crucial. Mm-hmm. So I think it's even an awareness even to physical therapy is my profession. So we didn't learn about pelvic floor physical therapy in physical therapy school. So I went to Jefferson, and we had one lecture one day in our orthopedic class, and it was about pelvic floor. It was just about the anatomy, and it was basically like, teach a pregnant woman to do Kegels. And it is insane. And I'm on this podcast, especially today, I'm trying to put up my social media, but my what I do every day is not just about doing your Kegels. It's so much more. So, but I think, yeah, it's that awareness, it's the conversation. And I really think it's improving with social media and, you know, people posting more and talking about it more, and, you know, women saying to a girlfriend, oh, I have this issue. And then she says, oh, me too. And I have a friend that has this, and, oh, they saw a pelvic floor physical therapist, or, oh, you could do this. So I think the conversation is more, but what really needs to happen is from our going to the doctors to talk about it at first.
So I feel like so often people will, I feel like a lot of things that we will end up seeing in our work is someone's having very painful sex, and they'll go into their OB and they'll bring this up, and the OB will say something along the lines of, well, have a glass of wine. Just have a glass of wine beforehand, right? As if it's like just all in your head, and that it's totally, totally normal for sex to be painful.
Which makes me so, so sad. So everybody listening to this, pain with intercourse is not normal. And someone like me, a pelvic floor physical therapist, can help you. And then I also, when I recognize that there's some kind of emotional component, send you to someone like Emily and Jen, because the two go together. And I explain that sex isn't just physical, it's mental, it's emotional, and it is physical. So with the pelvic floor, a lot of people think, oh, you know, when they think pelvic floor or, you know, physical therapy, they think, oh, I need to strengthen and do Kegels, when it's not about that. It's actually their pelvic floor muscles are too tight. They're in a contracted position. It's called vaginismus when a stimulus comes to our vulva and our muscles involuntarily contract to protect ourselves. So it could be due to a past trauma. And I say there's big T's and little T's. Doesn't mean you have to have a history of sexual abuse. It could have been, you know, you're 18 years old and your first OBGYN exam was really painful, or, you know, the first experience with a partner was not enjoyable and painful. So, you know, even inserting a tampon when you're 14 years old, 13 years old, if that was a bad experience for you, your brain, it registers that that area of your body is painful. And what it's going to do, it's going to go into fight or flight and protect itself, and it's going to contract. So in my treatment, you know, it's a very, it's not your typical gym setting where I'm in a closed room with dim lights. It looks, you know, I try to make it very calming because I'm not just working on the muscles, but I'm working on retraining your nervous system to not have that reaction to the stimulus. So
Gina, talk, if you could talk a little bit about like what your process looks like, because I'm sure a lot of people are thinking, what does pelvic floor PT actually look like when I go in there? Like, what's that process look like? So if you could speak to that a little bit, that would be wonderful. Yes.
So to be a pelvic floor physical therapist, you have to have a great knowledge of an orthopedic background. So when I have a patient come in, you know, whether it they're pregnant, whether they're postpartum, whether they're 16 and complaining of pain with intercourse, whether they're in their 70s and complaining of urinary incontinence, you know, I can go into different diagnoses that I do treat. But basically what I do is I sit them down and I get their subjective history. So I want to know everything about your, you know, your OBGYN history, your mental health, you know, any surgeries, when all your symptoms started, and kind of create this differential diagnosis of what's going on. Because a lot of times people come in and they complain of leakage, but it's not because their pelvic floor muscles are weak. They're actually too hypertonic. They're too tight. So I don't just say, you know, everyone shouldn't just be doing Kegels because it could be detrimental. So I start off with this objective. And then what I do is I check their proalignment. You know, I check their hips. So the asymmetries in our pelvis could affect the pelvic floor. So I want to create symmetry and function into the muscles, because if one hip is higher than the other, or, you know, your back muscles are overworked and you're not using your core correctly, it's all integrated in our pelvic floor. So then I have the patient do some movements like squatting. I like to see their mobility. I lay them down on the table. I want to check their breathing mechanics. So how they diaphragmatically breathe, how they expand their rib cage. Are they compensating with accessory muscles of their upper neck, and how they engage their core? So our core isn't just our six pack muscles. Our core is, I like to call it our dome home. So our pelvic floor is the basement, our diaphragm is the attic, and then we have our abdominal walls and our deep back muscles. So in my evaluation, I check to see how all those muscles are coordinating together, because if that's not coordinated, that's when we see dysfunction. So that's all a pressure system. Like, imagine a soda bottle and, you know, the cap's on nice and tight. So that's your pelvic floor. It's strong. And then you increase the pressure in the soda bottle. Well, that lid is going to stay on because it's strong. It's good. It's functional. It's coordinated. Versus you have a weakened cap and you increase the pressure system, boom, it's going to pop. So you're going to leak. So I'm looking, how is your rib cage? How's your diaphragm? How are your abdominals? And then I do my pelvic floor assessment. So I step out of the room. I have the patient go to the bathroom. I always get their consent, have them change from the waist down. And what I do is an external evaluation. So I see how the pelvic floor muscles contract and how they relax. And then I do an internal evaluation vaginally. And then sometimes they do an internal evaluation rectally, depending if they have constipation or fecal incontinence, or I see a lot of patients with tailbone sprains or fractures. Mm-hmm. So, but that's what basically, yeah, that's what my day, all day, every day is like. So that's my typical evaluation usually.
Okay. So we have, there's so many questions to go through here, right?
So many. I love it.
Right. But a lot of them have to do about childbirth. So first, I'm wondering, for any of our non-moms, non-parents that are listening, what are some reasons other people might know they have to go see a PT? Because I want to get into all of the childbirth stuff as well. But I think there's other people that are listening that are like, I kind of think I need to see one. And what would be some reasons of why people would end up in your office?
Totally. So it's not just pregnancy, postpartum. I, like I said, I see a lot of young females that have pain. They have, or elderly females. So, and I say females. And right now I am in a women's specialty center. So, you know, I typically, I see people with vulvas and vaginas. Mm-hmm. So I do see, I specialize in, I have a certificate in transgender health. So I do see that population as well. But for right now, I do not see people that have penises.
You can say penises, Gina. Yes. People with penises are not coming in.
I used to. However, let me explain. Men do go to pelvic floor physical therapy. Yeah. So men have pelvic floor issues as well. But when I'm talking today is the population I normally see. And children go to pelvic floor physical therapy as well for constipation, for urinary leakage. So I used to see children, and I used to treat men as well. But for right now, in this population, I'm seeing. So I can go off on my tangents.
No, we love it.
If you listen to one of our latest episodes titled "Em and Jen Fall Apart," you know the current feelings of burnout that we're both facing. Running our business, the therapy group, keeping up with the podcast, and enduring a house renovation leaves little time for grocery shopping, meal prepping, and cooking. So we are extremely thankful for our sponsor, Hungry Root. When I received my first delivery of the Hungry Root box, it felt like a breath of fresh air. Hungry Root saves me so much time and offers customizable options. Plus, with perfectly portioned ingredients, I'm wasting far less food than I would if I were left to my own devices in the kitchen. No more throwing away wilted veggies or expired condiments lurking in the back of my fridge. Each order is fully customizable, so you can take their suggestions or choose anything you want. They've got fresh produce, high-quality meat and seafood, smoothies, sweets, ready-to-eat meals, kids' snacks and meals, vitamins and supplements, and much more. I discovered Three Little Pigs, spinach, feta, and egg bites in my last delivery, and they are my new obsession. Also, Hungry Root's coconut curry sauce is not to be missed. Everything from Hungry Root follows a simple standard. It's got to taste good, be quick to make, and contain whole trusted ingredients. Right now, Hungry Root is offering Shrink Chicks listeners 40% off your first delivery and free veggies for life. Just go to hungryroot.com/shrinkchicks to get 40% off your first delivery and get your free veggies. That's hungryroot.com/shrinkchicks. Don't forget to use our link so they know we sent you. Anyone else go through soap and cleaning products insanely quick? At both my house and at our business, we're constantly replacing plastic bottles. Did you know that an estimated 5 billion plastic hand soap and cleaning bottles are thrown away each year? And if that's not bad enough, most cleaning formulas are 90% water, which is heavy to ship, leading to excessive carbon emissions. That's why we are thrilled to introduce our newest sponsor, Blueland. Blueland is on a mission to eliminate single-use plastic by reinventing cleaning essentials to be better for you and the planet with the same powerful clean you're used to. The idea is simple. They offer refillable cleaning products with a beautifully cohesive design that looks great on your counter. Fill your reusable bottles with water, drop in the tablets, and wait for them to dissolve. You will never have to grab bulky cleaning supplies on your grocery run. Refills start at just $2.25. You can even set up a subscription or buy in bulk for an additional savings. From cleaning sprays to hand soap, toilet bowl cleaner, and laundry tablets, all Blueland products are made with clean ingredients you can feel good about. And I'll be honest, I was a bit skeptical at first. Can eco-friendly products really tackle tough messes? Well, Blueland proved me wrong. The products I received, like their multi-service cleaner and bathroom cleaner, were powerful. Grime, grease, and dirt don't stand a chance. Blueland is not only good for the planet, but also for your wallet. And the starter kit I received was beautifully packaged. The bottles are sleek and sturdy, and the scents are amazing. Lemongrass, a lavender eucalyptus, and fresh lemon. Or you can choose fragrance-free. Blueland has a special offer for listeners. Right now, get 15% off your first order by going to blueland.com/shrinkchicks. You won't want to miss this. blueland.com/shrinkchicks for 15% off. That's blueland.com/shrinkchicks to get 15% off.
Right now, I see that are not pregnant or postpartum. Like I said, women that have pain with intercourse, whether they're in their teens or 70s, I see people that have urinary urgency and frequency. So it's not normal to have to pee all the time. So normal urination is at least every 2 hours. You should be able to hold your bladder for 2 hours. And a lot of times if people feel the need that they're always in the bathroom or they always have that strong urge to go to the bathroom, it could be a pelvic floor dysfunction, that the muscles are actually too tight and it's sending a false signal to your bladder and it's giving you that sensation that you always have to go to the bathroom. I see patients with interstitial cystitis, and that is a chronic pain syndrome where they have bladder pain, and it's actually, it could be because of their bladder, but it's perceived pain around the bladder. So you get a lot of symptoms. It feels like it's your bladder, but it's actually could be coming from other places like your pelvic floor. So I treat patients with IC. And a lot of times I see patients with chronic UTIs that they have this sensation or signs that they have a UTI, but then they go to their doctor and they have a negative culture. So what the hell is that? Like, okay, I feel like I have to pee all the time. I have pain when I urinate. So all the signs when you have UTI, I'm so sorry for everyone that's had it, but if you had it, you know what it feels like.
Daggers.
Terrible. Yeah.
So, horrible.
But then, okay, great. So then the treatment is you go to your primary care doctor or your OBGYN, they do a culture and check if there's bacteria in your urine. Great, there's bacteria, let me take an antibiotic, it's good. What happens when there's a negative culture, right? So if your doctor, your primary care doctor or OBGYN, and I'm not saying for all, because I get great referrals from a lot of practitioners that send to pelvic floor physical therapy, but for sometimes they'll just write the script. Here, take an antibiotic. I'm not sure what it is. You have these symptoms. When it actually, it could be coming from your pelvic floor. Right. So I see, and that has nothing to do with being pregnant or postpartum, but how does our pelvic floor get tight? Again, it could be a variation of things, but I've seen a lot with recent people working from home that they're sitting all day. Like I said, your pelvic floor are postural muscles. With COVID, people are sitting, they're contracting, they're tightening and shortening the area, and increased stress, anxiety, you know, just like people clench their jaw and have tension in their neck. They carry their weight in their shoulders, their tension in their shoulders. A lot of people don't even realize that you're a tight ass. You're literally tightening up your pelvic floor. I joke around. I say, stop being a tight ass. You don't even realize, but you're automatically gripping those muscles. And two, in our culture, women, we're so used to like sucking and tightening and gripping in, like instead of just letting it out, like it's not healthy for our pelvic floor, for our muscles to always be sucking and tightening in. So that's how I see hypertonic or overactive muscles that can lead to these signs and symptoms. So
well, and you're touching so much on the, and this I thought was a really good question. And also I wanted to like, kind of, you know, off of this one, have another question. Yes. But this question is, can't speak today. What's the link between mind and pelvic floor and how can you strengthen the relationship? Because I'm also wondering, like, at what point are you like, okay, we've done our work here and I need to refer you to a therapist.
So I took that question with two different perspectives. So it could be that mind body, that people are in that fight or flight response, right? Fight or flight is that when a threat comes to our body and we either fight it, we stick around and tackle the threat, or that we fly away from it, right? So that goes back to primitive times when we're running from a tiger, what our body does, right? Our pupils dilate, you know, our palms get sweaty, our heart rate increases. Well, now those threats are stress at work, maybe an unhealthy relationship, you know, our kids, so, you know, our finances. So those are all stressors now that we have that is the same fight or flight. So when we go into fight or flight, a cascade of hormones gets released, one being adrenaline. That's why, you know, you hear stories that someone can flip a car when there's some kind of car accident, because your hormone adrenaline gets released, you can flip a car. Well, once those hormones get released, what happens is there's a disconnect with the bladder and the mind connection, and that communication, it's inappropriate and causes bladder contraction. So people feel, you might feel like you have to pee, but you really don't. so, you know, like you go to the bathroom and then 5 minutes later you have to go do a speech on stage or you have to talk on a podcast or you have to sing, right? So you're nervous. It's because our bladder is innervated by our nervous system. It's connected by our sympathetic fight or flight and parasympathetic rest and relax response. That's how it contracts. That's how it relaxes. So when your bladder fills with urine, what it does is it stretches and it hits these receptors on our bladder. It sends a message to your brain, hey, you have to pee. And then you make that conscious decision. No, I'm going to hold on, or yes, I'm going to let go. It sends the message back down your spinal cord and it does the appropriate thing with our bladder. But like I was saying, in stressful situations, we're getting a false sense of urgency. And people feed into that habit. So there's no way that your bladder is filled if you just peed and 5 or 10 minutes later, you feel like you have to pee again. So for that mind-body connection, I teach patients about bladder retraining. So I've seen a lot of increase with this, with people working from home. You have the luxury of going to the toilet all the time versus if you're a teacher or a nurse or, you know, you're at a work situation at your desk, you can't leave. So when you have the luxury of going to the toilet all the time, you just do it. Well, that becomes a habit. So I do a lot of bladder retraining and urge suppression techniques that we shouldn't go to the bathroom just in case. Like, you know, you might have learned it from childhood. Like, you know, your mom, I try not to do it with my child, but you don't have an accident. Come on, we're going in the car, go to the bathroom, right? Oh, we're in the store. Let's pee first. No, you shouldn't just, as an adult, you shouldn't just go to the bathroom for your luxury. You should go when your bladder sends that signal to you. So to make that mind-body connection, we work on bladder retraining. But in the other, I was thinking about this, about pain. Patients don't even know their parts. They don't know what their vagina is, what their vulva is. They don't know, you know, where their clitoris is. So what I have them do is help to desensitize physically before sending to you guys, like, hey, you know, here's a mirror, take a look down there. Like, let this become, it's a part of your body. You shouldn't be shamed about it. It shouldn't be this negative connotation, because if you have negative, oh, I can't look at that pelvic floor model. Oh, I don't ever want to look down there or ever want to touch anything. How are you going to have somebody else touch you? How are you going to be okay being vulnerable with a partner, right? So you guys do an awesome job digging deep into finding out like the mental, emotional background of it. And I do, I kind of touch on all that too with my patients, but from a physical point of view that I really work, you know, to look at yourself, like touch yourself, I'm not even talking about masturbating. I'm saying just it's okay. It's a part of your body. And I see this in a lot of cultures, or, you know, if you were brought up like sex is bad, or don't look at your vagina, or don't masturbate, or don't do anything down there. You know, as an adult, you're going to think negative perception of it. And then again, it can lead into pain. So
can you believe we're on year 5 of Shrink Chicks? We have been podcasting since 2019 and have somehow yet to change the photo of us on the cover of the podcast. We are planning a photo shoot in a few weeks so we can finally update our cover art. We both obviously need new outfits for the photo shoot, but really didn't want to break the bank. So thank goodness for Quince, where we can get multiple high quality outfits for a very reasonable price. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high quality items priced within reach. For the shoot, we want to go with a few different looks, one being monochrome, so I opted for a few key items from Quince's collection, including their Mongolian cashmere tee, classic trouser pant, and structured blazer. I couldn't resist adding their timeless 14 karat gold jewelry pieces to complete my look, because who doesn't love accessorizing? The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. Plus, Quince only works with factories that that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes, making me feel even better about my purchases. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/shrinkchicks for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/shrinkchicks to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/shrinkchicks.
Okay, wait. So I have to ask you guys, this is a side note, but I need to personally know, where is the place that you feel like you always have to pee? Because growing up, I'm so embarrassed to admit this, but like anytime, because I was a big tanner when I was in high school, I would always go tanning. Like that was like a thing. It's like after school, we would like, go.
Emily, I went to high school with you.
I know. We went. Okay, Gina and I went to the same high school a few years apart.
Did everyone go tanning?
But everyone, yes, yes. Bad. Everybody, bad. You literally so left.
Bad. Don't go tanning. Yeah.
Oh my God. It's horrible for you.
Everyone was probably like comparing themselves. Like, oh, this person's so tan.
Totally.
Like,
that's what I mean. Tanner. Everyone had to be tan, right? Oh, I had like to the point where like I had the J-Wow tanning lotion. Okay. So.
We used to double dip. Have you ever gone double dipping?
Oh my God, you did it two a day?
So bad. Can we?
Okay.
Sorry, wait.
And this is why we.
So, wait, can I out you, Emily, right now? Because Emily had a tanning bed in her apartment at one point.
Okay, but I never used it.
She okay, never
that,
used it.
That is a longer story, but I did have a tanning bed in my apartment in 2012.
Listen, that was my vice. I don't do it anymore. I yes. get it.
Okay, and this is why we'll all be. This is why you should get into dermatology now. But yeah, I will say this. Like, in high school, anytime I went to a tanning booth, I was like, I'm going to fucking pee. I'm going to pee. Like, there was something about being in there and knowing that I had, like, 8 minutes left. I almost peed myself almost every time. And then, like, multiple friends of mine then worked at Hollywood Tans. And they're like, people pee in tanning booths all the time. Like, they said it was like, yes. They said one of the biggest issues they have is people would pee in the tanning booths.
My first thought too is like, do you get electrocuted? You know what I mean? Like, I feel like
I never happened to me, but like, I know, right? But I mean, there's not like exposed wires, but like, that's a great point, Jen. But so I have to know, Gina and Jen, is there a place that like you feel like you have that urge? Like, did you ever have that experience in life?
The thing that I was thinking about while you were talking, and you were talking about like bladder control, the thing that annoys me the most is having to pee when I'm sleeping. Like, and I'm just like, I don't want to. I just think it's just such an inconvenience to have to get out of bed.
So there's two types of incontinence. There's stress incontinence and urge incontinence. So Emily, stress. You're talking about urge incontinence.
Oh, am I?
Get into stress. So okay. Urge incontinence is when an external, when you get an urge to go to the bathroom and you actually pee yourself, like you have a strong urge and you're like, oh shit, I can't hold myself. I'm going to pee and I pee. That's called urge incontinence. And that has to do with our sensory and our nervous system input to our brain. Again, that brain and bladder connection. So people that like pee, they pee when they start hearing running water, or I have patients, they pee themselves when the garage door goes up, or they pee themselves with when they do the dishes, right? So they have trained their mind and connected it to the bladder that when those stimuluses happen, that it's connected to releasing and letting go of the pelvic floor and contracting the bladder. So tanning or being hot and or in like a heated space, that might have been a stimulus that triggered that response in you.
Oh.
And why? Because there's no way that you peed and then 8 minutes later you have to pee again.
No way. There's no way.
Right. So it's like a reservoir. It's always filling and emptying, and it can hold 2 cups of urine before you really have to pee. And that's the same thing with, it's called nocturia, but peeing at night. So I say stop drinking fluids 2 hours before bed, which is not always easy to do. And then always pee. You shouldn't.
Jen just started drinking water this week.
Truly, I am so dehydrated all the time. And I made a new kind of goal for myself to drink this water. But as we're talking, I have water to pee so bad.
Yeah. Well, lemon and lime, that's a citrus. So that's actually a bladder irritant. So things like coffee, teas, sodas, carbonated drinks, citrus, it's actually there. You're doing all the bladder irritants. So,
oh, guys, again, I'm so practicing while we're talking.
So this is all a part of my treatment and a part of what I talk about and do. It's not just like me putting your finger in vaginas and testing the muscle. So it's talking about your diet, talking about your habits, talking about your mental well-being, your relationships, you know, your exercise routine. So this is great. This is all part of it. But let me get back to at nighttime, when you feel like you have to pee, if you give in to that urge every night, your body's going to learn that and you're going to have to pee. So for your age, one time is somewhat normal, like 0 to 1, but you should not be peeing more than once in the middle of the night. And people don't realize if you, as an adult, wet the bed at night, the first thing I do is have patients get their sugar tested, because it could be a sign of diabetes if you leak urine in the middle of the night. It doesn't wake you up.
That's so interesting.
There's a lot of stuff that's related to the bladder.
So all the mamas will kill us if we don't get into this childbirth and pelvic floor. Specifically, yes. One of Jen's best friends who messaged, please, me. We know who you are, okay?
This is my jam. So
yes,
this is...
all right. So let's start with, is it actually possible to do anything to prepare for childbirth via your pelvic floor? What should people do? If people are listening right now, maybe they're pregnant, they're thinking about becoming pregnant, they're wondering, fuck, I don't want to fuck over my pelvic floor. What do you say from your expertise?
Yes, there is something you could do. And we don't talk about this. So someone did an awesome, I'm trying to get my social media, but someone did an awesome reel. And now it's stuck in my head. And it's going to be stuck of everyone's head. So your pelvic floor, they did this a video where it was like, move, bitch, get out the way, get out the way. Because our pelvic floor should get out of the way when you deliver a baby.
Okay.
So you will never forget that. They tell us to push, but what's actually pushing the baby out is our uterus. And again, that intra-abdominal pressure of our diaphragm and our abdominals, right? So our pelvic floor doesn't do anything during delivery. So it should stretch and relax and move out of the way so that the baby's head and body could exit. So what happens is, with the pregnant women in the first and second trimester, I work on strengthening and getting that connection of where your pelvic floor is and doing pelvic floor contractions, which are Kegels. But it's not just about like, oh, let me get my pelvic floor so strong, it's going to prepare me to deliver this baby so great. No. And I can't stand it. And all these like pregnancy apps and everywhere, it's like, oh, you're pregnant, do your Kegels, or go to this class that's for pregnant women, do Kegel. No, like, yes, it's good. Like, you can strengthen your pelvic floor and do a billion Kegels a day, which isn't good for you, but do them all day long. It doesn't matter, because it matters how big the size of the baby's head is. And it matters if you had an episiotomy, if you push more than 2 hours, or if you had forceps or vacuum use. So those three factors are all indicators that you might have pelvic floor issues afterwards. There's things that you can do to prepare for birth. So there was actually a systematic literature review published September 2020 about perineal massaging. So before, you know, there wasn't great research on it, does it really do anything? But they found in the systematic literature review that doing perineal massage while you're pregnant after the 34 weeks of pregnancy can really help diminish tears and episiotomies. So you want to, what I do in the third trimester is really teach women how to like relax and open up their pelvic floor. So that is definitely something that we can teach. And that's what I do with pregnant patients. So yes, you can prepare your pelvic floor for delivery. Again, the OBs, the midwives, they're trying to keep you and the baby alive. That's why it's not 1920 anymore giving birth. So they're trying to, you know, if it comes to your pelvic floor damage or the baby, if your pelvic floor is damaged, then come see someone like me. But those are some things that can help, is definitely, you know, pushing techniques, even different laboring positions. We talk about like how to labor, like Emily, tell me if you felt this way. Like, I learned about labor and delivery, but until I went through it, I didn't realize like labor versus even delivery. So you can labor for like 20 hours, but you only really push the baby out for like an hour.
Okay. So I will say, I had an amazing doula that I did all of my birth prep with. And so part of like my birth prep was like coming up with a plan
and teaching me everything. Now, I'm very privileged to have been able to afford, to do that. A lot of people don't have that. But if you are in a situation where you can work with a doula beforehand and have a doula there for your birth, she just like talked me through all of it and it really helps so much.
Yes. That's amazing.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
I have a question.
Some people think they can only have doulas if they do like a home birth.
Yep. Hell no. Well,
you can have
actually,
a doula if you go to a hospital. Like,
is that true with COVID? Actually, I should. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Is that true? I wonder now.
I'm not sure about right now. I'm not going to speak for right now. I don't know the protocols in the world today with the doulas, but I knew last year it was so unfortunate that doulas weren't able to be present. So
I will say if you are allowed to bring an additional support person of a doula, 100% do it. And we don't actually know. That must be every hospital's different policies. But okay, wait, somebody asked a really great question, which I want to get into because I think a lot of people don't understand what this is. And somebody wrote in, can I resolve diastasis recti 2 years after postpartum, and how do I know if I have it?
I love this. So
first you have to explain what that is to people.
I am. So
I have no clue what it is.
6 week follow-up. So what happens at your 6 week postpartum? And again, I'm generalizing, not in all cases, not all OBs, not all midwives.
But
what they're checking
a lot.
So what they're checking for is to see if your tissue has healed. Right. So if your C-section scar has healed, if your vaginal scarring has healed, if your uterus has returned back to its original positioning, that's what they're checking for. They're not necessarily checking for your pelvic floor strength. They're not checking for your abdominal strength. They're not looking at your motion. So what a diastasis is, it's a diastasis recti. You might hear DR and it's a big BuzzFeed word, and it's in a lot of moms groups talking about it, like, oh, I can't get my stomach how it was before. Do I have this? But basically what diastasis means separation, and recti is our rectus abdominal muscles. So you have this ligament that goes from your sternum, which is like right at the point of your rib cage in the middle, and then it goes down to your pubic bone. So that's called your linea alba, where our muscles connect to it. So if you could imagine like a hot six pack, right? That's like ab, separation, ab. It's not like a sheath of muscle, right? So when you're pregnant, your stomach expands, it stretches. And what happens is that sometimes due to collagen, genetics, if you don't use your abdominals while you're pregnant, so weakness or laxity, what happens is those muscles, they don't go back with multiple births. They don't go back to that original positioning of the linea alba. And you have a separation between your muscles that is larger than two fingers, or you have, it's called doming, where you kind of like lift your head up. And actually there's new research where 100% of women are going to have some form of diastasis in their third trimester because of the abdominal stretching. But if you're pregnant or, you know, looked up, when you lift your head up and you kind of see this like alien bulge, like it's like a teepee that's like coming out of your stomach, that's that like laxity of that ligament. And that, again, intra-abdominal pressure pushing up. So after it should, again, as you get stronger and use your core, that it should resolve on its own. But if not, there's different exercises, there's different massage techniques, there's different taping techniques. But a lot of it is, again, connecting your pelvic floor and abdominals. And for 2 year mark, reconstructing and of our any of our tissue, it's about 2 years for the remodeling and the remodeling phases of how tissue heals. So I would say for at 2 years, yes, you can work on it. It's ideal to really work on it, you know, if your OB notices it or someone would notice it after 6 weeks, and then really start to work on it. Because when you have that, what happens is you can have back pain because of weakness in our abdominals. You can have pelvic floor issues like leakage or pelvic organ prolapse. Not to scare you, Jen, but it's when our bladder or colon or uterus collapses into our vagina wall. And so it's not our actual bladder, it's the wall of the bladder. It's not
Jen's
our actual colon. It's not our actual colon. It's, oh my God.
You're going to pass out. You're going to be on the floor.
This is how well Gina knows us.
Not to scare you,
Jen. No, but it's like, it's real, dude. This really shit can happen.
It's real shit. So this is what happens. So it's 6 weeks. Women, they get cleared. Okay, you can go have sex and you can go exercise. Well, what the fuck does that mean? So like people, what does that mean? Like, where do I start? So someone who is an avid runner, okay, let me, I'm stressed. I'm not sleeping. I want to get some baby weight off. You know what? I feel pretty good today. I'm going to go run 3 miles. What the fuck? Your muscles, you can't just do that. Like, you just made a person and gave birth to a person, came out of your body. Like, that's the crazy thing.
I can't do that even without making a person. I can't do anything of the sort.
But you know what I mean? So they get cleared and then they're like, oh, let me go back to exercise like I did. And they're, you know, their pelvis has changed. Their strength has changed. Everything has changed after you have a baby. So you need to start from the beginning and build that back. And so what can happen is I see women, they get into exercise too soon and they do, they have this, it's a sensation that like, it's like something's in your vagina or it feels like a tampon's in there or like you're sitting on a golf ball. So that could be an indication of a prolapse or even, or even a tightness. And this is all shit that people don't talk about, but they need to know what can happen if you have a baby.
Important.
Or like they go and have sex with their partner. Let me tell you, the first time you have sex after you have a baby is scary because the last thing that happened on there was very traumatic. If you're breastfeeding, you have decreased estrogen. So your vagina is pretty much menopausal. So you're dry and, you know, your libido's down. So it's not this like, there's a baby possibly in your room. Like, it's not this like fun, magical thing. You might have probably self-conscious of the way your skin and body looks after just having birth. So, oh, cool. It's 6 weeks. You're clear. Go ahead. Like,
it's horrible.
No, you don't just can get back into that. And that's what a lot of my treatment is working on yourself, working on your confidence, working on your, even your scar tissue. So if you have an episiotomy, which means that they had to cut into your muscle, if any freaking doctor cut into any sports athlete or any knee or shoulder, what they would do is rehab it for 6 months, right? You tear a little ligament in your knee and you go to fucking physical therapy forever. But you literally push a baby out of your vagina, tear your muscles, and you don't do anything. You just, okay. It's crazy. But crazy.
What I'm hearing you say, I also want to make sure, is if you are listening to this and you've given birth and you have the opportunity to do physical therapy, go do pelvic floor physical therapy, right? It is insane. This should be part of, Gina will not celebrate herself, so I'll say it for her. Gina has spent the past 2 years also working on having Pennsylvania legislative passed to try to get this, that in the state of Pennsylvania, that like pelvic floor is like paid for and stuff. Now, she's done a great thing so far. She got it that May 24th is...
May
26th. May 26th is in Pennsylvania... the fourth trimester awareness day, right?
Oh, thank you so much, Emily.
So Gina will not celebrate by herself. That is huge. But what your main goal is to get, right, is for it to be that pelvic floor physical therapy is just what's done in general after birth.
Yeah. So if you can't tell, I'm very passionate about all this. And day in, day out, you know, I've been doing this for over 8.5 years now. And day in, day out, I have women come into my room just crying and, you know, so upset the way their bodies are or that this happened to them. Was there a way to prevent it? Or, you know, thinking that, you know, and then it spirals, as you know, into a mental health situation, right? Or, you know, you're in pain, you don't want to have sex with your husband, you don't have sex with your husband, you don't communicate, you're not communicating, you're going to end up in couples rehab, right? Mm-hmm. So, not that it's a bad thing, I think everyone should, but
but probably, But it's probably less expensive to just get the pelvic floor physical therapy than the couples counseling.
Also, I love the term couples rehab. I
Me
think
too,
that
because
that
that's what it is.
That's what, yeah.
Couples, yeah. Okay, wait.
So wait, let me go back on my tangent. So what I did, I got sick and tired of it. So I don't know. I'm not like, ask any of my friends. They'll like laugh that I am not, I don't know anything about like getting into politics or like emailing your senator, but I learned about it and I did it. And I emailed Senator Katie Muth in Pennsylvania. And I told her what I did all day and she loved it and had me come to her office and wanted to help me work on the team to write up this resolution. So the resolution is to bring awareness to what the fourth trimester is. And if any of people don't know, so it's this new terminology that is for postpartum. So you have your first, second, and third trimester of pregnancy. And then this is now labeled your fourth trimester, which is what a woman goes through mentally and physically after they deliver a baby. And there's not a certain time period. Like it's not just this 3 months of time. Postpartum fourth trimester can be a year, 2 years, 3 years. You know what I mean? Because our body just doesn't recover, or I hate the term bounce back, after you have a baby. So it's my goal of the resolution was to make fourth trimester known of what a woman goes through mentally and physically after she has a baby. But it's the goal is so that women will have access to mental health care and they will have access to pelvic floor physical therapy like they do in every other first world freaking country. Like in France, if you have a baby, you go to pelvic floor physical therapy. They know about it. And you go, you get paid like 6 to 10 sessions in fucking France. But in America, no one even knows what their pelvic floor is.
They're like, just go die. We don't care about you. Okay, wait. We could talk to you forever, Gina. We have to do, I'm going to do rapid fire questions. That's what I'm going to do. You get two sentences to answer. Are you ready?
Oh my gosh. she's really limiting you.
Okay, you ready? You ready? Does my OB need to refer me to a pelvic floor physical therapist or can I find one on my own?
So you can find one on your own. So it differs state to state. Sorry, this is way more than two sentences. I suck.
It's okay.
I'm a big talker. So I have what's called my direct access, and that's what I have a doctorate of physical therapy, and now physical therapy schools are doctorate programs. So it's, again, very state to state, but you could go see a physical therapist in the state of Pennsylvania without a script from a doctor for 30 days. So you don't necessarily need a script from your OB, but you can locate a pelvic floor PT at www.pelvicrehab.com or APTA, that's the American Physical Therapy Association, pelvichealth.org, APTA, pelvichealth.org. And both those sites will... you type in your zip code and you can locate a pelvic floor physical therapist in your area. And I highly encourage people. Yes.
Perfect. Thank you. Okay. Here is my favorite question, just so you know, out of all the questions people ask.
I know which one you're going
And everyone knows which one. Because which is, why do women queef when doing yoga and how to prevent it? And I would also like to say I queef while doing most exercise, specifically any core work or yoga. So I'm assuming queefing is just normal, but I'd like to hear from you, Gina.
Does everybody know what a queef is?
I hope so. Yeah, if not, let's tell them.
Give us the definition. And we're gonna put it on one of like our Canva things. Like this is the definition of queef.
Yes.
Yes.
What's the medical word? Is it queef?
I tried to look it up. It has to be queef. I think it's just queef. Correct me if I'm wrong, someone, but I don't think there is. It's basically, queef. For those that don't know, it's vaginal farting. It's like when you fart out of your vagina. So yeah. It's like, it's gas. But in medical terminology, it's when you have laxity in your vaginal canal. So an air passes through. So like during yoga class, downward dog, you're getting a lot of air in there, happy baby pose, right? And then what happens is the tissue moves, you do another certain position and it's gas comes out. It's when there's laxity and air involvement. So, and to help with this, you can actually train your pelvic floor, like to do a contraction when you think that it's going to happen. And again, Emily, it's all that about your intra-abdominal pressure and coordinating it so that you use your abdominals correctly with your pelvic floor. Also, some women use tampons or this awesome invention called the Impressa, where it helps like position everything in place and keeps everything so that air doesn't escape out of your vagina when you exercise.
Interesting. Yeah.
So is queefing problematic? Should I be concerned, is what you're saying?
No, not necessarily. It just means that there might be some laxity, but definitely, and again, too, like, yes, it's awesome for wellness visits, but it depends who you go to. Like, I am taking insurance. So when you're insurance-based, you have to justify it to insurance. But basically, I see people with any dysfunction. So like postpartum, if you're having urinary fecal incontinence or any type of pain. So, you know, again, too, like, constipation, is it normal? I see a lot of patients with constipation. Mm-hmm. And like I said, we talk about diet, lifestyle. And then I do retraining and teach people how to poop. People poop wrong. So I've had patients that for years have had constipation, and I just teach them how to relax. Their pelvic floor should relax, not tighten when you have a bowel movement. And it really helps. So
recently, Nikki, did you know, Jen, that Nikki put up like from a while ago, like we were going through all of our old files and there was one about how to properly poop from a pelvic floor physical therapist, and Nikki hung them up in the bathrooms in our office.
Yes. And I'm wondering,
next to the squatty potties.
I was going to say, do you recommend a squatty potty?
Yes. I love squatty potties. So when you want your knees higher than your hips when you have a bowel movement, because you your anal rectal angle in your pelvic floor, it's easier to relax when your knees are higher than your hips. So think of like kids, or again, in European countries, they squat over a hole to go to the bathroom. Kids, you squat. It's easier to be in that squatted position with your knees higher than your hips for that to able to relax. And if it, you know, we sit on 90 degree porcelain toilets with our hips 90 degrees, it's harder to have a bowel movement. And thinking like older people, when you're sitting on one of those high things because your hips, it's harder to poop. So
I have one final question before we get to calling BS. But I'm wondering, because when Emily and I like go to parties or we're meeting new people, we've like kind of lost all social norms because we're just like asking about people's trauma. And I'm wondering if you have a similar experience.
I talk about,
are you just like, tell me about your, how do you poop?
I'm wondering, is like, how do you poop? You know, like, I'm wondering if it's just like so normal that it just comes so naturally. Does that happen?
I'm not afraid to talk about this at all. I have gone and marketed in bars with my pelvic floor model, and I'm like, hey, do you know about pelvic floor physical therapy? Like, I'm not kidding. I don't mind asking people how they poop, or if they, I like posted a picture of, so vaginal dilators. So that's one way that we help women with vaginismus, like, that can't, there's women that can't even insert a Q-tip into their vaginal canal, so that the dilation helps them be able to handle penile insertion. So it helps, you know, you dilate up and it looks like dildos. And some of my friends and family members are like, what did you post on Instagram? And I was like, guys, this is great, we're having this conversation, like, I'm they're not dildos, they're therapeutic dilators.
And even if they were, you're allowed
and
to.
And even
them.
If they're dildos, that is really cool too, right?
We support you.
Okay, Gina, we love you, we love you, we love you. But we got to call BS with all of our guests, right? Call some BS that people think about your industry.
It is not normal to pee yourself. That is bullshit. You should never pee yourself. You should not pee. People think, oh, I had a baby, I pee myself. No, you shouldn't pee yourself. When you cough, when you sneeze, when you run, when you jump, you shouldn't have to pee yourself when you're in a tanning bed or in the middle of the night, or there might be something wrong with your pelvic floor. So go to a pelvic floor physical therapist. And then, so now I work with urogynecologists. People don't even know what urogynecologists are. So the two doctors I work with, they have their residency in OB and they specialize in pelvic medicine and reconstructive surgeries. And they are huge advocates for pelvic floor physical therapy, which is so amazing. It's, you should not pee yourself If you are, that means that there's something wrong. And it doesn't mean that your pelvic floor is necessarily weak. It could be that it's not coordinated. And someone like me in my profession can really help you.
I think that like when we go and see a doctor, like we just sort of listen to them sometimes, especially at that 6-week postpartum visit. It's like, okay, well, bye. Like, it's really important you advocate, right? So to say like, actually, no, like, I really think I need to see a pelvic floor PT, or I really think that I do need help with this, or I really do think. I think it's really easy for us to just take our doctor's word. And like a big part of like living your best fulfilled life is also advocating for yourself. And you just gave us a ton of information of many people listening probably thinking like, I could probably use a Gina. I could probably get something out of this.
Women are so lucky to be able to go to you, truly.
Yes, yes. Gina Cunningham, my pelvic floor angel. My gem, I love you. Wait, and then let me leave with this. Before we end, I'll tell the story about how your husband changed my life. Do you know this? I ran into Gina on the street before we got super close. My daughter was 6 weeks old. It was the first time I ever left the house with her. By chance, you were going to a party with your daughter in Phoenixville.
Oh my gosh, I can't remember this right
yes.
now.
Yes. And your husband looked at me and said, just make it through the first 8 weeks and you're going to be okay. Aww. And he was the first person who said something to me like that. And he said it, and he looked and then said it to my husband and he said, you guys are going to be okay, just so you know. And aww. I think like, so now you can know your husband changed.
Are you okay?
No. He lied to me, by the way.
No, first couple weeks. In the end,
no, it's so, it is true. If you can get through those first 8 weeks, it is so life-changing. Yes. But like, you do not realize how much you need to hear that until a random person you've never met before tells you that on the street. So now you can go tell him. Hey, if you liked this episode, you want to send it out, you think someone else might like this episode, give a friend. Apparently, I'm supposed to now awkwardly ask you all to review us. Unless you hate us, please don't review us. But
yeah,
if you'd like to give
us... review us if you like us.
But if you want to give us a 5-star review, I'm supposed to ask you to do that now too.
We're very fragile.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. We are fragile. Thank you for listening to today's episode, because to grow yourself, you got to know yourself. Bye, guys. We love you. We'll be right back.